Hi there. Welcome to Mushroom Hour. Today on Mushroom Hour, it is our great privilege to be joined by Tess Brzezinski, founder, head educator, and cultivator at Fungi Freight's Urban Lab and Environmental Studio. A science degree graduate from Wayne State University, she works as an environmental scientist and continues doing research with mycoremediation in the city of Detroit. Tess is a member of the Michigan Mushroom Hunters Club and the North American Mycological Association. Throughout her studies, she has learned the role that mycelium plays in the environment and how beneficial, tenacious, and magical that it truly is. Through Fungi Freights, her goal is to educate Detroit and its surrounding neighbors about the benefits fungi have on health, food security, and the environment. Fungi Freights offers an array of educational workshops and events revolving around mushrooms and their never-ending abilities, from identification, foraging, fungi biology, DIY cultivation, and even mushroom art. Their events never get dull in how they celebrate mushrooms. Their goal is to enlighten the community on the fascinating world of fungi. Tess, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's really a pleasure to have you on. Your project is inspiring, and I just think, you know, there's so much cool potential there in Detroit, and projects like yours kind of make that seem more like a reality. But before we dive into kind of your work with Fungi Freights, mycoremediation, I always like to get a backstory on the person we're talking to, the origin story, if you will. So Tess, how did you become obsessed with fungi?
Oh, yeah. Let's go back a little ways. So I think I should start off by just saying like how I got really in tune with nature. And I think that was impacted or influenced greatly by my mother. My mother's of Lebanese origin. So she's always like allowed us to engage in the natural world around us. We'd stop on the side of the road and, you know, if there were like grape leaves, you know, growing, and we would have to get out and pick them or in mint and just kind of foraging within nature, and then her bringing it back to the kitchen and kind of just showing us that balance between like respecting nature, but also being able to utilize it for personal health and well-being. So I guess she like kind of tuned me into nature and its ability to like heal and provide for us. But then I think about my grandfather of Polish origin. So of course, Northern Europeans really are in tune with mushrooms and foraging. So we had a cabin up in Northern Michigan, and I always remember him just being obsessed with like the spring morel season. And we would go out and start foraging for morels, and he would bring them back, you know, to the kitchen and cook us up morels. And at that time I was young, and I was like, ew, like especially a morel mushroom, you know, it's all looks kind of like a brain and has all these gaps.
Yeah, a little alien. Yeah.
A little alien. You kind of just want to like squish it. And just not being so interested in eating them, but just going out and learning about them with him was super impactful. But I think the obsession came really around like my teenage years. I kind of was struggling with just self-acceptance and confidence and just what's my purpose here in life. I kind of just felt like an outcast. I didn't really fit in with many people at that time. And taking my first psilocybin trip and really finding that appreciation and like self-love and acceptance through that experience. So it totally changed my life around, and it kind of gave me like repurpose and like just self-acceptance. And that's really when I became obsessed and fascinated. Like if this organism could provide love and acceptance within myself, what else can it provide? So yeah, that's the background, I guess.
Well, I love that because you have such deep roots in foraging, in developing a relationship with the natural world, and even with mushrooms, you know, having other friends who have Polish ancestry. Yeah, Polish people love their mushrooms, like much Eastern Europe, Northern Europe. Yeah. So that's, you know, no surprise that you'd somehow develop a relationship to mushrooms. But like many people, you found that healing ability of psilocybin-containing mushrooms to really be the kicker to like become obsessed. but you were definitely into it before it was trendy, before mushrooms were cool.
Oh,
Tess was out as a little kid, like looking, hunting for morels.
Even at 15, people thought I was a weirdo, you know, and all through college, even my terrestrial ecology professor thought I was, oh, you must be a weirdo. All my ecologists are weirdos. If you, you're a terrestrial ecologist. How do you not appreciate mushrooms? But yeah, anyway.
Well, you know what? Being a mycology weirdo is now like a badge of honor and everyone wants to be one. But did you explore mycology in the academic realm or when you were at Wayne State? Kind of what was your focus and did mushrooms integrate in there somehow?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, obviously being a teenager and that starting my interest and obsession with mushrooms, then getting into my actual like studies, it was like a super aha moment when I realized like my passion for their like healing abilities and just like self-help along with like actually being able to be utilized in science. So starting off, I was studying microbiology. I love microbes and that whole field, but I didn't really feel like I was in the right niche. There were a lot of pre-med students and nothing wrong with, you know, pre-med students, but it wasn't feeling like I was in the right spot. So I found the environmental science program and I ended up switching over and I thought that was way more fitting for myself because it was like a mixture of biology, microbiology, and geology and like soil and kind of bringing it all together for me. And I started studying bioremediation and using different bacteria and fungi for remediating pollutants in the soil. And then I was just like, whoa, mushrooms, fungi for like cleaning up contaminants and like my love for like science and soil. And then also how they can help in other ways internally and personally. And it kind of just all clicked. And I was like, yeah, here we go, take off. And it took off from there.
Yeah. Were there any projects you worked on that stood out when it came to bioremediation? And the reason I ask is just to get a tangible example of something I think so many people get excited about. So many people who get into mushrooms hear about microremediation or bioremediation. And I know for me, it was like, oh my God, this is the answer. You know, we don't have to spray a pollutant or put a pollutant in the environment to try to clean up another pollutant. And we don't need to just off-haul soil or cap something. You know, maybe mm-hmm. there's a way we can actually heal the environment. So were there any projects you worked on that stand out just to give us a flavor, if you will?
Yeah. So I was working on a micro-remediation project with the Greening of Detroit. It's another like green grassroots program that has developed here in Detroit. Working with my mentor, Chris Wright. He's no longer with us. Rest in peace. But he kind of taught me so much about that field of mycology within microremediation. And how I like to describe this project was not because I want to be realistic about it. It's with microremediation. It's still, you know, we don't really have all the answers yet with it. And we still have to see like how it works. And it's not like on this huge, large scale basis. It's pretty much, I like to think of about it like bringing dead soils back to life. Soil is a huge part of who we are, everything. You know, it provides so much. It provides life for us. We are creating these deserts, these deserted soils all over the world. And now more than ever is it becoming like a great catastrophe. And it's because we are just taking all of the nutrients and minerals and everything out of the soil by overplowing and just not practicing sustainable farming techniques. So before cleaning up the contaminated soils, also introducing mycelium into soil to help bring back that nutrition within the soil.
Okay. Yeah. You have to set up kind of a healthy foundation, you know, start reintroducing some of those microorganisms, basically start actually putting the soil ecosystem back together a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. And, back to the project, I guess, just to kind of dive a little bit into it, we set up like a test plot and we knew that this plot was contaminated. We looked at like historical data. There was like a leaking underground storage tank. A lot of areas like that used to be like a gas station or something will have records of an underground storage tank that has been like leaking some sort of hydrocarbon, which is like a gasoline or diesel based product, leaching it out into the soil. And some of them have been even leaking since the 70s. So that's kind of like how you start picking your areas, by just looking at historical data and then moving in and kind of seeing like, oh, okay, let's set up a plot. Let's have our control. Let's till in some mycelium here that we know that can uptake hydrocarbons from the soil. And, you know, this is kind of, it might be, you know, a little bit over some people's heads that don't really study this. So we can always like break it down.
Break it down. Yeah, break it down. I'll be that person that's over the head and ask the question. Make sure even, you know, someone like me can understand it.
I guess just to keep it brief, how this actually works is mycelium, the vegetative root structure of fungi, uses an extracellular enzyme system. So they actually digest outside of themselves. So through their hyphal tips, through their mycelium, they exude these extracellular digestive enzymes and break down contents like polymers and break them down to monomers. And then they're allowed to reabsorb them into themselves. And fungi are known as the grand decomposers here on Earth, right? So they are able to break down dead organic matter, mostly carbon-based, and recycle those nutrients into the environment and allow them to be bioavailable for other organisms, which is fascinating. And it's an amazing process. The circle of life kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Being life to death. So fungi, I would say like saprophytic fungi that could break down dead organic matter, are the only organism that can break down lignin. And lignin is what makes up the woody content of trees and shrubs.
Right.
When you look at lignin in a on a molecular level, it's, you know, molecular structure. It actually mimics that of hydrocarbons. It's comprised of aromatic ring structures. So when we talk about fungi breaking down PAHs, which are polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, because that molecular structure mimics that of lignin, which fungi have been breaking down for millions of years, they're kind of already trained with this molecular structure. So they are like, okay, here's hydrocarbons in the soil, no problem. We'll just munch away at it and break it down. That's kind of how it works, like on the cellular level.
I think that's a great overview. And in doing my research for this, I think that's the lignanolytic enzymes that are actually ones that are effective at breaking apart those carbon chains in our dreaded PAHs and TPH and all those hydrocarbon fuel molecules.
Yes. And I'm really glad you brought that up because I totally slipped over that. And it actually is a specific enzyme, what you mentioned. So yeah, thank you.
That's really fascinating to understand that process of how it works. Now, when you're talking about, you know, setting up test plots, obviously you're having a control plot that won't have any of these kind of nasty hydrocarbons in it. You're having a control plot that you've tested, you found TPH, gas, motor oil, whatever was in that tank, diesel. And so then when you're talking about integrating the mycelium, what is that process like? Because that's where my disconnect comes in, where I start understanding a little bit of the chemistry and I start kind of understanding the concept, like it makes sense how this organism could adapt with the exudates it currently has to adapt to this new food source that we want to get rid of. But then how are you effectively integrating that mycelium in a way where it can actually do its job?
Yeah, sure. So we have the control because, you know, things break down and degrade naturally in the environment already. And then, so how you do want to apply this process would be to grow out the mycelium of whichever species you're going to be working with. There are several different species that can break down these contaminants. So whichever species you do choose to go with, you'd want to grow it out on a substrate beforehand. So you can get that mycelium really healthy and its immune system ready to go. You know, a pile of wood chips, for example, and you allow the mycelium to kind of take hold and develop. And then you would till it into the soil. So about, I would say like, you know, 6 inches down. This could even be like a study that you do apply on your own, just, you know, the depth different depths, see what works better. Some contaminants stay closer to the surface of the soil. Some are deeper down. But that's kind of how you do it. You would grow the mycelium out, get it ready and healthy, and then till it into your test plots. And take samples, I would say, like every 3 weeks. So you would have to analyze and send out soil samples to a lab to get, you know, actual data.
That makes sense. So we develop our robust mycelium, and then it's as simple as kind of tilling it into that layer of ground, letting it reestablish, testing it. And in your study, what did you guys find about how effective your mycelium allies were at cleaning up some of these hydrocarbons?
Unfortunately, our study wasn't able to fully finish because just with different things going on, the Greening of Detroit lost funding. Therefore, we also lost funding because you do need funding for these kind of projects, especially like sending out lab work. But we did find, I don't have actual data here to share, but on a tabletop study, I was just doing this research with a friend back in school and seeing that it did degrade these pollutants in about a 4 month time span.
Oh, wow.
It was quicker than we even thought, like seeing degradation. So speeding up the process and actually working. So that was great. But unfortunately our actual like study out in the environment was put on hold due to lack of funding.
Well, and I think that hints at this bigger theme that has a lot of people scratching their head when we start to learn about this information is, you know, why is this not happening everywhere? Why is this not one of the biggest fields of research with loads of money behind it? You know, that might be because growing mycelium isn't going to make anyone a huge amount of profit or something. You know, that could be part of it. But if you know or have any ideas, I mean, how widespread is kind of institutional interest in this? Just because you've been at universities, you've worked with some groups that are trying to implement these projects. Is there some motivation and some funding behind these projects, or is it still very much a struggle, even though you do have promising tabletop results and smaller lab results?
That's a good point. I would say, honestly, it's still at like the grassroots level. I don't think it has been adopted or accepted by like larger universities where like that's usually where the funding takes place and it goes to. Now with mycology being a more accepted and not overlooked field of science, I think there's definitely hope for this remediation process to be taking place. I think it's also lack of education. I think people think, oh, this is going to take a long time. People want like fast results. Like, let's just excavate the soil and dump it somewhere else, creating another problem just in a different location. So I think just stuff like this, like talking about it and performing your own studies, getting citizen science involved. I do want to just mention, because I kind of left this out, if you are going to, you know, take an interest in this, to do your research and be careful and be safe. Know your pollutants and always wear your PPE, like personal protective equipment and whatnot, just because you are working with chemicals and contaminants that could be harmful to your own personal health. So that I just wanted to throw that in there.
Don't start playing around with PAHs and PPHs. That's not what this message is about. But you do see very much that citizen science has a big role to play in this. And obviously, you did that tabletop study over 4 months where you were mimicking kind of your bigger plot-based study and finding results. Mm-hmm. I guess, how can citizen science engage in this? Maybe just a breakdown of your tabletop experiment. And then how we could extrapolate that to someone maybe doing this work in their own community or their own yard, kind of a general set of protocols, if you will.
Sure. Yeah, I would just say start growing out mycelium. Do some studies.
Always a good place to start. Start growing mycelium.
Start growing it. Get comfortable with it. Work with different substrates. Find a contaminant that might be abundant in your area. Train the mycelium to start growing on that. And then just honestly making test plots and just like garden beds full of mycelium, just like getting mycelium kind of integrated into the environment. I think that's a good place to start, you know.
Start working with mycelium, start getting it into the soil. And then do citizen scientists have access to the tests required, or do you have ways that we could, you know, send soil in for testing? So I'd imagine you want kind of a baseline. And then, like you were saying, along the way, every couple of weeks, how do we do that? How do we get the testing we need to see if it's working?
That's a big part of it. So I do know that some universities will allow you to send in a vial of soil just for like pH and just like nutrient content. I think it's close to free. So that'll just give you like a background of like what's in the soil, not too analytical where it's going into like different constituents, whether it's heavy metals or like PCBs or hydrocarbons like in your soil, but just an overall background of like the acidity or the alkalinity of your soil, what kind of nutrients are abundant in it or lack thereof. So I would just reach out to like your, you know, local university, their like agricultural department. As far as getting actual lab work, I would just look at labs in your, I work as an environmental scientist, so I'm sending soil samples to the lab all the time. Before this, I wouldn't have known anything about where to send soil. So just research environmental laboratory testing, soil laboratories like in your area. It can be quite pricey, but that's another thing, getting funding. And I'm hoping, just to bring back to like the citizen science portion of it, I think it would be a great idea to start like a platform for people like interested in doing this.
Well, I love that idea. And, you know, there's kind of the NAMA Mycoflora Project across the country. How cool would it be to have a NAMA kind of micro-remediation project where people like yourselves, different luminaries kind of in micro and bioremediation, are putting together this general set of protocols, or here's how you go about it, and then helping people with funding, or people, you know, in their own mycology clubs can put together the donations. I was a little bit in the environmental world myself, and you're talking about like EPA 8260 and 8015, those different protocols you have to run.
Yep.
You know, they get pricey, but they're not astronomical. It's not like thousands of dollars.
Right.
I think it's something mycology clubs could do. And what a fun project to be able to engage in to see how you're remediating contaminants. But of course, fungi play a huge role in soil health, even if you're not getting rid of a specific pollutant. So Tess's call to action, just start growing mycelium, putting it in soil, is going to help no matter what.
Right. It's not going to hurt.
Speaking of citizen science, speaking of making community change at the grassroots level, we have to talk about fungi freights. This is kind of your project in Detroit, basically inoculating the community with a love of mushrooms in every way imaginable. How did that project start for you? Because we've heard about your background in environmental science. Obviously, you have a career in environmental science. So how does a full-time scientist have time to start, you know, a community mushroom organization? How did it come about?
Time? I don't know.
Yeah, the answer is don't have time.
Don't have time. But yeah, always try to make time for the mushrooms. Yeah, I am based in Detroit. I love Detroit. It has so much soul, so much heart. Detroit is a fascinating place because it has become desolate over the past like 30 years or so. I mean, after the 1967 riots, it was like one of the largest riots in U.S. history, actually, just like rebelling against like police brutality and racism. A lot of people fled Detroit after that. So not only was it kind of like deserted, but we have all of this vacant land that was able to like come back naturally. So a lot of like natural restoration has been able to take place over time. And you just see like all of these little mini ecosystems like all around the city. So people might look at it as like vacant, desolate, you know, in these like different pockets of Detroit. But I see it as like a beautiful natural comeback, you know, allowing all these native plants to come back, and like it's super beneficial for soil. So long story short, I was always doing volunteer things in Detroit, working with garden programs and whatnot, even since I was like still in high school. And I just saw how beneficial it was for these communities that sometimes do not have access to like a green space or any means of learning in a different way. You are what you're surrounded by. And yeah, Fortunately, a lot of communities, you know, children are just subjected to like a burned down house next door to them, or like vacant buildings where, you know, certain activities like that are taking place in there that aren't, you know,
sketchy circumstances.
Yeah. For sure. For sure. And like seeing these garden programs like pop up here and there when I was younger, and just seeing like the children come back every single summer and like growing and becoming like so fascinated by it. It's like, it's just the opportunity wasn't there, but once it is, you know, they'll be totally in tune to it. So I acquired 7 lots in East Fulltown, Detroit, and that's where.
So you got 7 pieces of contiguous pieces of property?
Right. Yeah. So it's just about under an acre. Yeah. That's a lot of work. There was a lot of garbage. I was cleaning up a lot of garbage for the first couple months there. But the container part came in because it's like an urban area, just like vacant lots. It was just like a nice modular way to like start this up. And yeah, so it's just going to be a community space revolved around mycology, of course, but also like a science center for children and people of the community to come learn and engage in like the natural sciences.
Well, we have a hunger for it, right? I mean, people have a hunger to learn about nature, and obviously you were kind of born into that. So you had that appreciation from a super young age. And how amazing that you get to now pass that on to people by doing the work you do. But yeah, I imagine there'd be a lot to navigate when it comes to not only cleaning up kind of vacant land that apparently nature hadn't reclaimed yet, you had to help that process along, but even with permitting to navigate kind of city laws and do what you wanted to do. I mean, do you have to consider that kind of thing when you're working with, you know, it's not necessarily a permanent structure, it's a shipping container, but was there some bureaucratic red tape you had to work through to kind of make this become a reality?
So not quite yet, because the freight container space that I'm putting together right now is more of a lab space, and it won't be open to the community just yet. But in the next few months or so, I will have to, you know, get it inspected and whatnot.
Yeah.
If it becomes like open to the community, of course, like the outer space and everything will be open to the community and to learn, but my personal lab space, maybe not. However, I will have another container that will be like more of a classroom based learning center that would definitely be open. And it might be easier to kind of get the regulations and like get it up to code than a, like an actual lab.
Yeah.
But that is the future endeavor. So I am going to have to go through certain trials and stipulations, I'm sure.
Well, the reason I ask is it is such a modular system. You know, anyone with the willpower, you know, freight containers aren't that expensive. I live near Oakland. And of course, that's like the homeland of freight containers. They're just everywhere. Yeah. So it would be interesting to hear how you move along, how you're able to navigate some of that bureaucracy. And if you are able to set up a fully functioning lab in a freight container, it creates this cool model that I think people can engage in. So right now then, the outdoor space is mostly where you're interacting with the public, sharing with people what you hope to bring to the community. What are some of the events that you've held at this early stage? And then what's been the general reception from the community there in Detroit? Because, you know, you're coming in and kind of making a change, planting your flag, if you will, to make this way station. So what are the events you've been holding thus far, and what's the response been?
Event-wise, it's kind of been difficult because I did acquire this land right before the pandemic. We are like in right. The pandemic right now. So it was because outside, you know, I did hold like a log cultivation workshop, and people love those, you know, because they can like take a log back and just like let it sit in their yard and wait for it to fruit in a year. But
right.
We did do a log cultivation workshop. I did have like some volunteer opportunities, you know, to just come and like help clean up the land. And we just did a winter care kit and coat drive. So we kind of just had like an outdoor setting with like a bonfire, music, like hot chocolate and coffee, whatnot. And people came and like brought gently used or new winter coats, gloves, hats, and other like personal hygiene things, just so we can pass those out to the needy this winter. It is cold in Detroit, you know, at these times, and during this pandemic, especially, just trying to do our best to like keep those on the streets like healthy and warm.
Yeah.
We had a great turnout. We had like over 150 we were like overwhelmed with all the love.
Oh, fantastic. I love hearing that.
Yeah, it was amazing. And like a lot of people from the community came and just dropped by like in the neighborhood. And yeah, we've had a great acceptance to this project from people in the neighborhood. It's been great.
Well, in talking with a lot of community organizers, people that want to create grassroots movements like this, such a huge element is working with the community. I've even had people tell me that's the most important element, is making the community feel like they're involved. Have you found that to be the case with Fungi for AIDS? Have you found it like key to making this successful is integrating the surrounding community and getting them stoked about it, excited about it?
Oh, for sure. You know, that's definitely a huge part of it. And I, you know, was a little bit nervous coming into like a community like this or like a neighborhood like this. And, you know, what the vibe would be or what the...
It can feel like you're trying to come in and be a savior or you're trying to come, you know, so there, right. There has to be some authenticity and openness there.
Absolutely. And I have always, since the very beginning, even just been like so welcoming to everybody, just like asking questions and also just becoming friends with like the neighbors just in the area that have been there for so long and just wanting them to know, like, this is what I'm doing here. And we want the realest feedback possible, you know, even if you hate it and say, whatever, just, you know, let's all be real. And also just like learning from the community as well. We want to come in and provide this space, but we also want to learn from you guys. I have been in this. Some of my neighbors are, you know, in their 60s and 70s. And it's so great to have that availability of like the historical part of the community and just kind of bridging the gap of this broken down area to like something that's going to be newer and abundant, just wanting it to all mesh together, not just like this is something here that we're doing and integrating it wholesomely.
Yeah, it's not, you know, just something that you can flex on the gram, like, look at this project and have a TED talk. And like, it's actually trying to become part of the community. And I love that perspective you just offered, where you're talking with people who can give you a history of this place. And when I talk with people about fungi, about foraging, about developing that relationship with nature, so much of it that gets people so nourished is this idea that you're communing with place and land and space. And so in your case, that is not only with mushrooms, but that's also with integrating with the community and really learning about that land. So I see how that's all connected. Now, have you done any micro remediation tests on your lot there at Fungi Freights? I'm really curious.
I have not. That is something we have planned. I do have like an area that we have planned out for that. However, it's just still so new and still so much work to do. But that is definitely a future endeavor for us.
I figured that must be the case. That was going to get worked in there somewhere. But I think you can also offer us a unique perspective on just starting a project like this. Okay, I appreciate you being really open and authentic about what it's been like. So, I mean, are you guys like a company? Did you form some kind of 501c3? Is it just Tess getting these lots, doing the hard work and kind of figuring out as you go along? What's that process been like to start some grassroots movement like this or organization like this?
Yeah, so it's been a learning experience, that's for sure. Fungi Freights actually is an LLC. I am thinking about moving it over to the LC3, a nonprofit and a business. So some states allow that. It's the LC3 or L3C, either or. That's actually allowing you to make, it's like a nonprofit, low profit. And I just, so much of the work we do is community-based, that I think it, you know, would benefit more in being able to like get funding and grants easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely been a learning experience. I sometimes feel like I bit off more than I could chew. Sometimes I'm just like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? And like, I kind of am a one-man band, and just getting more people involved is something I have to get a little better at, you know, asking for help and because it is essential and it's crucial to like make something like this come alive. But advice, I would just say go for it, because that's kind of what I did. And just things are working out and keep plugging along.
Well, when your thoughts, your emotions, and your actions are aligned, great things usually happen if you just kind of follow that path. And it sounds like that's very much what you're doing. What has the response been from friends and family? Because, you know, you're getting these feelings of overwhelm. You're trying to balance this really ambitious project with a full-time career. You know, what's been the reaction with kind of your inner circle? Or have you forced them to all become part of the volunteer army, or what's that been like?
I have a few close friends that have been super helpful in making this process happen. And I'm super thankful for that. But I do have a great support system, whether it's just like people just like reaching out to me and like, this is so interesting. And like, I admire this so much. So like having people even just like rooting you on from afar and just, it helps to like bump your spirits back up when you get to those low points of feeling like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And just having a support system has been super beneficial. And I'm definitely grateful for like my friends and family that have seen me grow this dream, you know, making this dream into like a concrete reality. You know, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, they thought you were the crazy mushroom girl.
Yeah.
What does she think? What is she doing?
They still think I'm the crazy mushroom girl. But yeah, but things to show for it.
Yeah, well, exactly. You start getting people to buy in when you start having some great kind of concrete results and have things moving forward. So that's really exciting. Now, we've talked about the idea of testing, doing a little micro-remediation work. What's the vision, though, for Fungi Freights? You know, obviously, we're in this time of the pandemic that makes things all a little up in the air. But what's kind of that future vision that you'd like to see Fungi Freights become as you continue to ingrain yourself in the community, continue to like develop the inside lab spaces and all that? What's the final vision look like for you?
So the final vision are, I wanted to have a permanent location here in Detroit. It's my home. I have so much love and compassion for like the city and its people. So I wanted to like first provide this atmosphere and the setting for my community here in Detroit. But the future endeavor, Fungi Freights, is working with food security and like places nationwide and worldwide. And so this is kind of like our prototype lab space and just getting it kind of all the kinks worked out here, but providing these shipping containers in areas like around the world that are affected by food insecurity.
Yeah.
Some places where the minority don't have like a steady income or nutrition. So equipping these freight containers in these communities around the world that are affected by food insecurity and like kind of staying there for a 3-month span and building the structure out, teaching a few people in the community that are going to be interested in like taking it over, like how to sustainably grow mushrooms for an economic benefit, but also for a nutritional food source. And yeah, just leaving them with the container and the knowledge to carry it on. And that's what our big future endeavor is.
Using mushrooms to save the world, the grandest endeavor we can embark on. Well, and for underserved populations who are afflicted by food insecurity, you know, it's a vicious cycle because it's hard to focus on kind of setting up the framework to do that kind of plan, to set up any kind of facility where you can then grow mushrooms and expand it out. That requires like this security where you can think outside of the immediate future, right? So that's super important to be able to then offer this template and your experience on how to set it up to really like make that foundation that people can then build off of and empower their own communities. It's just really exciting because I'm hearing more and more about different mushroom projects that are able to do things like that. And I think that's really the roadmap to lasting change. And I think it's no mistake that it kind of mimics the organism that we all love that we're trying to use to do these things. It's like this decentralized network of mycelial nodes or, you know, that people are establishing to help make this kind of big systemic change. All of us want to see really positive change. And I think we get disillusioned by big institutions sometimes. And I think that's why this kind of grassroots movement where you're kind of building a model that you can then use elsewhere is actually the answer in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you put that perfectly because that really is kind of like how it is working with these smaller organizations revolved around mycology, fungi, and mushrooms, it's like we're all about like this organism, but like this organism, what it mimics is like what we want overall for like the world.
A homeostatic system that's processing information everywhere all at the same time, but nowhere in particular. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's definitely the model, one of the many ways that mushrooms can inform how we can be better humans and organize more effectively as a big human organism that we kind of are. Well, how do people support Fungi Freights? Because now we're all excited about it. I want to contribute. I want to be part of this. How can people support the Fungi Freights project?
I have a website right now. Just checking out my website, maybe signing up for some consultation or different events. I'm going to be having some virtual events coming up. I don't have a FundMe page at this time, but it's definitely something I'm looking into setting up. My website is www.fungifreights.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, those social medias, and you can learn about like more workshops and things I provide to support. It's always appreciated.
Go get connected. And do you have overlap with other mycological societies or NAMA, you know, North American Mycological Society?
Yeah.
Has there been any cross collaboration or?
Oh yeah. There's been quite a few. Leif Olson, I've worked with him quite a bit. He's awesome and really into remediation. Craig, NYC.
NYC.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Just talking with him because he is really into like lab work and has been doing that for a while, DNA barcoding and sequencing. We have Circle Pines on the west side of the state. There's a mushroom camp there and working and teaching with them. And Alan Rockefeller has come there every year, and just being able to go out and forage like bioluminescent fungi with him has been awesome. But oh my gosh, I could be naming people. Olga, Smugtown, and just we're a niche, you know. I'm sure you know you're a part of it.
You're very much integrated with the bigger community. And I was seeing that event, and I was going to ask about that. You said it's Lone Pines out there in Western Michigan? Circle Pines?
Circle Pines, yeah.
Yeah, because I was seeing pictures of that on social media. And of course, whenever the rock star Alan Rockefeller shows up, it's like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he loves it out there. And of course, Will Brown, Mycosymbiotics, and that festival. That's the sad thing, you know, about the pandemic. There's so many, you know, New Moon Mycology Summit that Olga throws. And
yeah,
it's just, that's kind of been like the big downside for me is like being able to like go and teach at these different events and just reconnect with all the myco folk. I've been getting a lot of work done, but I still do miss the mycological community.
Yeah, we all crave that connection. Somehow virtual just isn't the same as seeing people in person.
Right.
Well, and so the future of Fungi Freights sounds bright. I encourage everyone to go follow you, to support the project. You know, even if people just have ideas, I mean, especially if you're in the Detroit area and want to connect, I think that's always super helpful to just keep momentum going. But is there anything else in the future for you when it comes to mushrooms or fungi? You know, foraging season probably winding down there in Michigan, but any other things on the horizon you want to share with us?
You know, just I'm always wanting to grow and expand in this field. And aside from like teaching people about it, but also like if anyone's interested in just coming and just volunteering, and you know, we can all learn from each other. So I would just say right now is just focusing on this project and then expanding my horizon. Like I would like to get better at identification and foraging. Absolutely. You know, it's not my strong suit. So things like that. I'm always just wanting to learn and grow.
Always learning and growing. That's what we have to do. You know, and we've talked about this regenerative project that you're doing there in the heart of Detroit. I mean, what's kind of your biggest hope for the future of Detroit, or what potential do you see with different greening projects going on there? I mean, is it, I have this idea of Detroit becoming this like regenerative agriculture hub with all these cool new models of organizing and practicing urban agriculture. But what kind of bright future do you see for Detroit?
I think that would be an outstanding future for Detroit because we have so many of these like blank slates that are just like urging to get like grasped up and like utilized. And
right.
We have so much business coming back to the downtown area, restaurants. And yeah, so the downtown area is coming back. But for those other little pockets like surrounding the downtown area, like that are just kind of vacant, and I could see so much potential for like farm to table type of deal. Like we do see a lot of that, like restaurants actually having a lot in Detroit where they put up like a large greenhouse and they do all like farm to table. So like, I love that, you know, a lot of agricultural comeback. So
yeah,
just making it more of a locally based, locally supported dynamic.
Yeah. And, you know, it's often said that kind of the most distressed environments are where nature throws up these novel, cool solutions. And I think that's sounds like that's happening in Detroit. I think you're very much a part of that. Well, as we wind down then, I'm going to hit you with my final three questions that I ask all my guests. And I love it because the answers are always different and always give me food for thought. The first one is a mushroom that you love and why? And there's not the pressure to make it your favorite mushroom, but maybe just a mushroom or a fungi. It doesn't have to be a mushroom fruit body. A mushroom or fungi that you love right now. Why?
Okay. So absolutely love the psilocybe species. Absolutely. The genus species cubensis.
Special place in everyone's heart.
They can provide so much like self-healing that I think a lot of people are in desperate need of right now. But really fun one that I have to mention is the dung loving species. It's the genus Palobolus. And it's actually the fastest organism on the planet.
Fastest organism on the planet?
Yeah.
Faster than a cheetah.
Faster than a cheetah. So if someone asks you, like, okay, what's the fastest organism on the planet? No, it's not a cheetah. It's a dung-dwelling fungus. It's a small little, like, cannon. So for it to germinate, it has to, like, go through the digestive tract. So okay. You find it in a lot of, like, cow dung or, like, horse dung. And it, like, germinates in the digestive tract. And then the fruiting bodies come out once the feces are excreted. And it's like fruiting body has like this little cannon like shoot at the end of it. And it just like shoots out its spores at like 20,000 Gs. It's like insane. So I think these guys like put it on like a slow-mo and you can actually like see them, the spores like accelerate. It's pretty interesting. So.
And what's the name of our rocket ship fungi?
Palobolus. Crystallinus. Yeah.
I had not heard of that one, and it's probably one of my new favorite mushrooms.
Yeah, it's so pretty wild. For
blessing us with that one. And then kind of big general question, but what has this relationship with fungi you've developed, you know, from a child with your grandfather all the way to relationship with psilocybin to now, you know, where you've kind of fully inoculated? What is that relationship? How has it changed your life? What has it brought to your life, maybe in terms of perspective? Spiritual significance, you know, how's this relationship with fungi changed you, or what has it given to you?
I would say it's like given me the ability to kind of see things in a new light. And I think that came through like finding self-love and self-acceptance, and therefore being able to like look at the world in a new light. And then through that offering and sharing, you know, my experience and hoping through sharing it, other people can like feel this as well. And I think overall, that's like kind of what the world needs is like a shift in like consciousness. And it starts, you know, with yourself. So it really just helped me personally and internally. And therefore, my outlook on life changed in a more wholesome and loving way. And spreading the love.
Like we were talking about, it can be hard to see sometimes, but that's sometimes the way that actually the biggest change happens is we change ourselves and who we're choosing to be, and that ripples outward. So I love that it did that for you. And I think a lot of people listening can relate. And then what is the lasting impact that you hope to make with your work, you know, there at Fungi Freights, who you're choosing to be now that you're of the mushrooms, you know, what's the lasting impact you hope to have or that change you hope to ripple out to the world?
I would say just reconnecting, hoping that people can reconnect with nature and see that and feel the intuitive part of themselves, that we are nature, that we are all connected. And I think once people realize that, they'll start to care about it because you care about yourself, right? You know, because you want yourself to prosper and like survive. But we can't do that without feeling that same way about nature. So integrating nature back into our lives that we have so been so disconnected from, I think will help people to really care about it and like save it overall. Because if we don't have nature and the well-being of the earth, we don't have well-being within ourselves. It'll take care of us if we take care of it, you know.
No bigger impact we can have than helping everyone feel the oneness that is how things are. You know, we are all one. We are one with nature. We all kind of hear that. It's a bumper sticker phrase, but to actually embody it,
To really feel it. Yeah. It's a great thing.
Well, Tess, thank you so much for coming on Mushroom Hour and just being really open and authentic about your journey. I'm excited to see how Fungi Freights develops and all the work you put out in the world. But thank you for coming on the show and sharing with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.